This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy.
Hello everyone, this is Well, 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 brought to you each Monday evening by the Victorian AIDS Council. My name is Jack and my co-host this evening is Adam from our health promotion team. Thank you for joining us tonight on this very special edition of Well, 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 the Queen's Birthday Edition. So we hope you have all had a lovely and celebratory day. Adam, anything special on for this holiday?
I am actually, because this is a pre-record, so we're going to let people know that, we're actually off. We're taking the holiday with you guys as well.
That's what we're allowed to.
Exactly. I will actually be working at Leatherball this Friday, coming up at the Greyhound.
Leatherball? What?
Yes.
Oh, sounds like something I should be going to. Or maybe not.
Certainly is. So I'll be working there. We'll have if you've gone, you would have seen it already. Boylesque would have been there, we would have had a couple of drag performances, and we would have had a BDSM bondage sort of workshop. Oh. And
interesting.
From all accounts, planning going forward, even though we're doing this retrospectively,
yes,
it'll be really good.
Well, it beats my weekend of housework and trying to find my heating remote controls.
exactly.
Now, Adam, who are we chatting to tonight on the show?
Well, this evening we have a few guests on the show, so a lot of ground to cover, basically. I like to call it a plethora or a hot pot of little good topics.
And Tex will be pleased for you saying that.
Exactly. I say it just for him. So this is the first of an election-focused series that we're going to be doing heading towards the July 2nd federal contest. So VAC will be looking at political aspects in a general sense over the next few weeks, which is really good when we do a series, I think.
Yep.
Cover a breadth of topics.
It sort of does.
But tonight specifically, we'll be chatting with John Mainwaring, the senior policy analyst at Victorian AIDS Council, on the campaign and what we may need to think about, kind of in a general sense, that we may have an impact on outcomes for the GLBTI community. And secondly, we're exploring STRIDE. We love an acronym, and it is an acronym, and we'll explain what the acronym is later, as part of Men's Health Week. So STRIDE, we'll talk about what it is, what's the focus, what does it do, and who's it for.
And if you've missed out on the last of our shows, or if you just want to hear one of our shows again, or share it with friends, or listen to our voices one more time, you can always download podcasts from previous episodes of Well, Well, Well at www.joy.org.au. And our thanks must go to the wonderful David, who is our Joy podcaster.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, this is a pre-record, so you can send us your love by emailing and texting in, but we just won't get it,
unfortunately.
But we still love it. We still love hearing from our listeners. So
exactly.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on the best radio station in Oz, our own Joy 94.9. In case you haven't heard, we are going to the polls on July the 2nd for a federal election, a double dissolution election, which is significant in itself as it lowers the quota for Senate representation. Our first guest tonight is John Mainwaring, senior policy analyst at the Victorian AIDS Council, to talk to us about one aspect we may need to think about. Welcome to Well, 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 John. It's as though you've never left the studio, really, hasn't it?
It really feels like that this week.
Now, John, tonight we're talking about LGBTI representation in Parliament, what that may mean for policy development and how it may impact upon public debate and legislative outcomes. Now, to start with, can you tell us how many members of Parliament openly identify as part of the LGBTI community today?
Right now, currently sitting there, are five parliamentarians, only one of whom serves in the lower house. The other four are in the Senate, but actually from a broad swath of parties. So Greens, Labour, Liberal members.
So across the spectrum.
Yeah, which is pretty remarkable.
No National Party ones we know of?
No National Party ones. We do have a couple Liberals. There's a senator from WA, Dean Smith. There's the member for, I believe it's North Sydney, the guy who took over Joe Hockey's seat, Trent Zimmerman. First openly gay member of the lower house. Then old hats Penny Wong and Janet Rice and what's his name, South Australia. Another guy, he's wonderful, we love him. okay. even though I can't remember his name.
That's okay. So, but that's, what, about 2% of the elected representation?
Yeah, that would be just about 2%, so not very much at all, considering about 11% of the Australian population is LGBTI or identifies as LGBTI.
But I guess it depends on whether you find politics interesting as well, because a bureaucratic job, as much as you can do a whole lot of good, would obviously be very difficult to get into.
Well, for some of us, it is our lifeblood. It is what we live for. And some of us are skipping out on some quite interesting and fun parties in order to hand out how to vote cards and watch election returns on the second.
On a serious note, because that was just me, you know, being facetious, some would probably argue that, like, such a representation, like, LGBTI representation is sort of bad public policy to a certain degree. Like, many conservatives would say progressive policies, and the debate being led by members of the LGBTI community as part of a homosexual or a Marxist agenda.
Correct.
So how would you counter that?
Because socialism and communism are such terrible things. How very dare we?
Communism works on paper.
Nothing works on paper. except... Anyway, lest we get into that.
I detract.
I think we need to acknowledge the fact that there are actually some good points on that side of the argument. You know, you want to believe the best in people. You want to say, yeah, people are going to get up on merit. They'll have earned it, that they'll be the best qualified person for the job, and that they'll do the best possible job in that position. That said, that's not how it works, and we've seen that repeatedly because we have Senator Cory Bernardi. Quite frankly. But I think we also need to challenge the idea that merit looks one particular way. Merit isn't necessarily climbing up through the party structure, scratching backs, and having degrees from certain universities. Helpful, sure. But not necessarily the right things. We need to broaden our definition of that and allow life experience to be part of the definition of merit. Because when you're having a discussion in a party room, or you're launching a campaign or speaking to media, you need to acknowledge that there are people from diverse backgrounds across the country, and that they have different experiences, they have different needs, different views, and those need to be acknowledged. Maybe not always adhered to and followed through, but acknowledged. To say it's part of a gay agenda is... It's a bit ridiculous to me. I put it in the context, maybe not to the same degree, but the context of the civil rights movement in the U.S. This wasn't black people saying, we want special rights, we want everybody to be, you know, lower than this. This is simply asking for equality, equal representation under the law. And it's not happening. So we're pursuing more creative avenues in order to attain that. Simple.
So just reset our framework and our thinking around equality, social justice and human rights, and that you get a different path leading to some of these outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But don't you think elected politicians often have to follow party line on certain issues? So how would electing LGBTI people be any different from people following the party line or towing the party line?
Well, you need to think about the way people actually engage in political discourse. So think about having a conversation on Facebook. Think of that as like a different sort of party room. When you have that discussion, you usually get, it's a bit of an echo chamber. You get one side, you get the other side, and you get really vehement discussions, and nothing gets solved. So unless people from different perspectives, different backgrounds are chiming in and giving their two cents, there's not really a broad understanding, an accurate understanding of how rights and situations work. So if you put that in a party room context, if the people who are standing up are your Cory Bernardis, are people like Pauline Hanson, your George Christensens, these really extreme but incredibly loud, incredibly vocal people, they're the ones who are making a difference because they're the ones who are shouting the loudest. And because the other people in the party, while they might not agree with those people, don't necessarily have the vocabulary to engage with that or to counter that. So if you were to say go from having, I believe we have 80 some odd members of the Liberal National Parties in Parliament, say you made 8 of those LGBTI, George Christensen and Cory Bernardi are going to have a hell of a lot harder time saying this really hateful stuff if they have to face 8 people who said, you know what, I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm bisexual, I'm trans, and you're wrong. You can't engage in that, and it kind of brings the discussions to the middle.
It brings it right into sharp focus, doesn't it? Yeah. When you think of it through that prism, if you like.
Yes, absolutely.
How can we advance issues to ensure progressive policies are introduced and debated soundly, calmly, rationally, and perhaps eventually implemented?
It's a tricky one because we're often at the pointy end of some really nasty stuff, as we've seen, you know, with Roz Ward, who was hinted at earlier, and kind of the campaign against her. I think a bit of this is personal opinion, but I think we do need to acknowledge that there is validity to the other side of the argument at times. It may not be expressed in the best way, but these are people with opinions and views that do need to be acknowledged. If we want to get our views forward, though, we need to speak up better. We need to have greater voice, greater representation. And so we're trying to spark a discussion by suggesting quotas for LGBTI politicians within the parties.
Okay. Well, I think we'll explore more of the potential of the LGBTI representation via the concept of quotas with John shortly. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Jack and Adam from the Victorian AIDS Council's Well, Well, Well team, and we are talking about LGBTI representation in Parliament. We've got John with us tonight, and he just suggested before the break, you brought up the issue of quotas, that could be explored.
Mm.
John, can you please expand on this concept?
Well, it's not a new concept, even in Australia, because in 1994, the Labour Party, they recognised that they had an issue. And, I mean, you can look at the treatment of Joan Kerner while she was Premier of Victoria. That was pretty harsh and pretty terrible, frankly. But they recognized they had an issue, that they needed to have greater representation of women. And so they installed a quota in their political party structure, saying, all right, a certain percentage of our winnable seats, mind you, not
winnable. Not just candidates.
You can't just say, we're going to run a woman in Tony Abbott's seat and count that, because there's, sadly, no chance in hell that person would win the seat. So in winnable seats. And so they did that first in 1994, and seeing the success of it, the way it's brought women in, engaged them in the party in a way that had never been seen before, they recently said, all right, men, women, equal 50% representation for each. And that's increased women's participation in the Labour Party from single digits, I believe up to 43 or 44% is what we see now.
It's quite significant in 20 years or something.
20 years, and it's significantly contributed to the representation of women in Parliament as a whole, which I believe is just over 30% now, which seems low, but sadly in the Western world is quite a lot.
Pretty reasonable.
Yeah. And this is something that's been done the world over, maybe not in countries like, you know, the UK, the US, or New Zealand, but it's done regularly in Latin America, in Africa, even in some European countries.
Yeah. So to sort of, I guess, be a little bit controversial, as I like to do, would quotas be the same thing as affirmative action, to have a representation, and does it actually mean the same thing?
They're a little bit different concepts. A quota is a quota. It is saying, like, all right, this is a number that we need to achieve. Now, in achieving that number, they're going to say, they're going to find the best person for that job. They're not just going to say, hey, you have a vagina, you can be a candidate. They're going to say, what are your qualifications? What do you bring to the table? But you're a woman and that helps. Affirmative action is more the concept of all other things being equal, we're going to give it to the person who needs a leg up, which is frequently done and absolutely should be done to rectify past injustices and overcome systemic discrimination against certain groups.
Damn you, any easy responses.
Yes, sorry.
Well, I mean, I guess, has the quota philosophy actually ensured greater female representation? Because, as you said, it's grown from single digits up to, 42 or 44%. So has this actually worked, having this quota system in place?
I would argue that it has. It's an interesting thing, because a lot of people want to approach this from the sense, it's like, well, if you want to participate, if you want to be represented, stand up and be represented. And it's not that simple. And if you're, you know, if you're from a group or part of a community that's been oppressed, that's been denigrated, and that's been marginalized your entire life, you're not going to step up, because you don't have that. You feel, even if you can recognize it intellectually, you don't feel you have that right or that capacity. So it's incumbent on people that are in positions of power that do have that ability to say, you know what, we recognize the value you bring, and we're going to bring you along. And I think that's done enormous things for empowering women and saying, look, our issues and opinions are valid, so we're going to bring them to the table.
But that's just the Labour Party. What about the Liberal Party? What's their position on so-called quotas?
it's a really interesting position. It's a bit nuanced. It's not necessarily a bad one. It's just a different one.
Okay.
They reserve 50% of their internal party positions for women. So not necessarily candidates, mm-hmm. but anything else. 50% women, 50% men. For their candidates, they still insist that they have a merit-based system. So I'm not going to say it necessarily produces worse outcomes, but I think it gives a more narrow view of the world, because traditionally people have to come up through very particular channels in order to achieve pre-selection. That said, we put out a call to the parties and said, you know, we're curious, who are the gay candidates you're running, you know, LGBTI candidates you're running? And aside from the Greens, the Liberal Party is actually running more LGBTI candidates than Labour.
That's quite shocking.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, all right, but then you need to say, what's the variety, what's the breadth of the experience that those LGBTI candidates are bringing versus, you know, necessarily the candidates in the Labour Party who would be more amenable to causes important to our community?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is Well, Well, Well on Queen's Birthday holiday, talking about the forthcoming election with our senior policy analyst, John Menwaring. We'll be learning more about John and what we may need to think about as part of the federal election. You're on Joy 94.9, and this is Well, Well, Well.
Joy, Joy, Joy.
Now, John, for this election, the candidates have already been selected, so this has got to be a longer-term plan, no doubt, to promote the concept to the political parties.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's not change that happens overnight, and it's going to be a proposal that a lot of people have some very strong, vehement reactions against. But it's important for us to engage in this discussion because the acceptability of certain debates in this country is shocking. Yes, there's been an uproar about the defunding of safe schools. Yes, there's been an uproar about the plebiscite. But the fact that the discussions are happening at all, that a plebiscite on marriage rights is happening, that the concept of, hey, don't be an asshole to children, is a controversial concept, absolutely ridiculous. So we need this in order to promote the discussion and say, we are citizens, we demand equal rights, and this is how we're going to do it. So they need to consider it a shot across their bow.
So what about allies? Are they discounted automatically, or is it better to actually have a quota of LGBTI candidates rather than people who could potentially be in, I guess, more favourable seats because their electorate is so demographically spread? I mean, how do you define that? There's a tricky question. Come on.
It is a tricky question because...
Sorry, I'm pushing you a little bit.
No, it's interesting because, you know, if you look at... to use politics as a whole in a broader concept, you look at say what happened in the 2014 state election in Victoria, where you saw a very strong Labour candidate and strong Labour representative lose the seat of Melbourne to a Greens person who is a bit less experienced, albeit with similar policy positions. So there's the argument that's like, well, why are you driving the Labour Party further to the right and giving it to this person? So looking at that concept, it's say, There's one thing about having a strong ally. That's great. And thank God for them, because we wouldn't have achieved much progress in this country in terms of LGBTI rights. But I think we need to acknowledge that there is something about the ability to speak to one's personal experience with a particular topic that resonates above and beyond simply conceptual and theoretical talk. So it's one thing to say, I'm an ally, I think this is wrong, and this is why, and see how people respond to that. It's a totally different thing to say, you know, I'm a gay man. I've been bullied. I've been discriminated against. This is my personal experience. I've felt this. I've lived this. And I am your colleague. And how very dare you engage in that same behavior. So it's not to say allies don't have anything to bring to the table. But I think we need to acknowledge that value, that power of the personal experience.
Now, on a realistic level, what do you think are the chances of succeeding in getting the political parties to even look at this issue, the concept of quotas?
I don't think it has much chance of actually getting up, certainly not with the Liberal Party. It is antithetical to them on a fundamental philosophical basis. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why you don't see quotas often in Western Anglo democracies, is because we're founded on concepts of liberalism that have been around since the 1700s, and this is just contrary to that. That said, I think it's going to give them pause. All the parties, even the coalition parties, they will look at this and say, how are we responding to this issue? Because as we as a community grow more vocal and more visible, it's going to be a lot more difficult to silence us. It's going to be a lot more difficult to overlook us. So I think we look at the situation as it is now and all the really hideous stuff that's been said. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. Certainly the case in the U.S. has been the case. I think it's going to be the case here. So I think parties will need to consider how they treat us as a community and how they respond to us.
So there's a pretty strong social movement that's growing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the fact that we can really quickly and strongly coalesce around a certain issue and stand up and hold rallies and speak out and get the right thing done in the end. Hi, Roz Ward, sorry about your dismissal. La Trobe Uni, you should be ashamed. I think that that's incredible. What we need to stop doing as a community is eating our young, is attacking each other. We need each other. You know, I might be a white, gay, cisgendered male, but guess what? My experience is valid. So even if you are a trans woman with a totally different experience than me, we are allies in this. We need to work together if we're going to achieve any lasting change in this social movement and to really have our views truly represented.
And so is there going to be a formal position being put out there to the public by VAC?
Yes, we're in the process of refining it and making it a little more palatable for the public and a little less nerd speak. My apologies for my writing. But yes, there will be something out there. And we'll also be, when we send out a newsletter to our members this next month, we'll be including a list of all the people that we know of who are LGBTI and running for office.
Terrific.
So you'll know, not necessarily endorsing them, because that's not our place, but so you know that there are people out there putting their face out there, and you can then contact them and ask them about what their positions are on LGBTI issues.
Okay, John, look, I'd like to thank you for coming along tonight and for your insight into the political arena.
Absolute
and you've given us lots to talk about, lots to think about, and to talk to each other about.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, and this is Well, Well, Well. And with us now to inform us about STRIDE, we have Caleb Hawke from the Victorian AIDS Council. Cal, welcome to Well, Well, Well yet again. And to begin with, what is STRIDE?
Okay, so STRIDE, As so many things in our space, STRIDE is an acronym. It stands for the Stigma Reduction Interventions in the Digital Environment. So that is, it's a project that's administered by Beyond Blue and with funding from the Movember Foundation. So all those mustaches grown in November have kind of contributed to this and other research projects. And it's actually a research project to fill in a knowledge gap about whether or not online interventions are effective in reducing the stigma associated with anxiety and or depression or and or suicide, in fact. So yeah, it's a bigger project. The STRIDE project houses six smaller projects inside of it.
Okay, would you like to expand upon that?
Sure, absolutely.
Because, you know, I don't know very much about STRIDE or what it's aiming for, or in fact what the catalysts were.
Yeah, so what the catalyst was is that there's a knowledge gap, specifically in stigma as a barrier for men aged 30 to 64 in accessing mental health services. So the reason they kind of draw it around 30 to 64 is basically adult men under the age of 30, there's a real difference in sort of their digital literacy. So the younger, if you're under 30, you're probably pretty clued into the digital environment because you've grown up with it as an early adopter. You're going to be much more internet
savvy. It is generational. It is.
And so to a point, I mean, once you kind of get past it, because people
trust
with living
me,
memory of
from
before.
From my perspective, it's generational.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So basically, I mean, 30 to 64 is like three generations in it.
Yep.
That's why I sort of say, you know, to avoid generational. So it is, it's a knowledge gap to figure out whether or not men 30 to 64, if you engaging in an intervention in the digital environment is effective in reducing the stigma associated with mental health issues. It's specifically about the project that I'm working on is one that's kind of a big community partnership, and ours is focused on kind of self and perceived stigma. But each of the six projects each has a kind of a different nuance and focuses on a different subpopulation of men who are experiencing anxiety or depression and or suicide.
Now, you said this was a Beyond Blue project, if you like.
The overall project.
The overall, but who are the other partners involved?
So the project that I'm working on, that community partnership, is sort of the only LGBTI community one, if you will. Obviously, only a segment of that, but it's a community partnership. VAC is the chief investigator, so Victorian AIDS Council. Then you've got ACON, so it's an interstate partnership because the sites and the resources are available nationally.
Sure.
And then we've got our design partner is Licorice, which is a design agency. Yeah, design agency based here in Melbourne.
Okay, yes, we've had
and you know, all those different design agencies all just have different names as a noun.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we've got our evaluative partner is the Centre for Social Research and Health at the University of New South Wales. And then we have two community partners as well, because our site, just to add complexity, because if that wasn't enough people in the mix.
It sounds like a lot of players, but
yeah, we have Living Positive Victoria for one of our sites, which is aimed at...
You're terribly important.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're aimed at men living with HIV, or rather this aspect of the project is men living with HIV, who are also experiencing anxiety or depression. And then we've also got Gamma New South Wales, who's probably a little bit lesser known, and they work with heterosexual men in a heterosexual relationship who are kind of exploring same-sex attraction. They commonly, I guess the common term is gay and married men, which is where Gamma gets its name from. But oftentimes there's that the terminology of gay and married men is not necessarily one that washes with that population as a whole. So that's why I kind of sort of say men, same-sex attracted men in heterosexual relationships.
And so how many people are actually involved in it? Because if you've got six or seven project partners sort of putting it together, how many people are actually on the ground putting it together?
Putting it together. I mean, overall, from beginning to end, you're looking at the one. But in different stages with a project, with the digital partners like Licorice, they've been heavily involved in this first few months when you're doing design. And I mean, this isn't, you know, these websites that are being created, the wireframe that's being created for this, this isn't just sort of like we went onto WordPress or we went onto, you know, a basic out-of-the-box kind of website builder. This is entirely a bespoke solution. It's entirely built from the ground up. And so that was something that went on for quite some time. And then there's advisory groups that have informed the development of the content and even just sort of the model design of that. So we have two advisory groups. Everything kind of splits and multiplies because we've decided to create two websites for a single wireframe. So basically what I mean by that is that the structure is shared by both sites, but you make two sites and they exist side by side. And that way, because it's a research project, it's filling in a knowledge gap, you're evaluating that structure to see if it's effective. And then that fills back into the other five projects that then all go back together and inform Beyond Blue.
So the basic premise is you've got two websites and it's an e-mental health service. In a summation, because you were like, CMS, bespoke, I'm like, no, sorry, no, thank you.
Yeah, so,
so it's basically two interactive websites, so for people that are potentially experiencing stigma and discrimination and don't want to access a traditional mental health service for whatever reason, whether they're a gay and married man or a man in a same-sex relation, you know what I mean.
Yes, the same-sex attracted man in a heterosexual relationship or a man living with HIV. Yeah, there's a whole range of barriers that this kind of covers. So guys that aren't based in the cities, so if you're not based in Melbourne or Sydney, that maybe accessing face-to-face service, totally not an issue. With the gay and married men population, there's been a few projects interstate that have happened before, but the problem is they never have critical mass to actually have a group. There might be one or two guys here and there, but they never have that kind of uniform group always available at the same time. There's also, you know, as far as accessing the digital space, there's just the barrier that a lot of people don't necessarily want to have face-to-face. And so this sort of allows people to kind of experience both an education and kind of a connection approach.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next. Is it sort of just a website where it's like, here's a bunch of information. Do you tick these boxes? Do you have anxiety? Do you have depression? Or is it more of an interactive, informative, like how is the website actually going to be different from me getting onto the... VAC website, which has a wealth of information, but it's not an interactive site.
So it's it actually uses, so what Beyond Blue has done was they released a paper on stigma reductions in general and looking at the two approaches that are the most effective. And what we know there's an education approach and there's a contact approach. Education meaning obviously building up someone's knowledge and literacy of mental health, and contact approach, which is first face-to-face, or sorry, not face-to-face in this instance, but connection with someone who's living with a mental health issue, whether that's anxiety, depression, or suicidality. And what this does is combines the two. And so there's actually, you kind of choose your own adventure, if you will.
I love those books.
Because you can go into the site and you can actually access the knowledge base where there's a range of articles. There's a steady stream of new and arising content coming through all the time. And there'll also be some inclusion of people's firsthand experiences living with mental health and that cross-section between whichever population they come from. And then there's the connection component, which always has sort of an option live, which is either a discussion board or a live chat. So there'll be live chat sessions with like a they're peer moderated and they have like an assigned topic, or there'll be discussion boards where people can kind of participate ad hoc on a thread, which could be around, you know, for men living with HIV, it could be how does antiretroviral treatment interact with, say, prescription medicines that you might be prescribed whilst, you know, dealing with anxiety or depression.
Kel, in a nutshell, in a large nutshell, okay, thank you for giving us an overview of STRIDE. Of course, this is part of Men's Health Week as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. So, June 13th to the 19th is officially Men's Health Week. And, yeah, we're really excited to be soft launching everything in light of that.
And so where is the website? What is the website URL that people can go to during Men's Health Week, which will be on the 13th, which is the day this is airing.
Queen's birthday.
Even though we're pre-recording. Exactly where do people go if they want to find out more information about the project or to actually access the service itself?
So if you want to know more about the project overall, STRIDE as a whole, you can head to Beyond Blue's website, which I believe is beyondblue.org. And if you actually want to access the sites, they should be going live at the end of Men's Health Week because, you know, digital development, it's always exciting. But the websites, once they are up and running, will be pete.org.au and dale.org.au. If you want to get a bit more details about each of those, I'd start off at the Beyond Blue website and go from there.
Okay.
Fantastic. Kel,
thanks for joining us and explaining STRIDE. And we're going to be hearing next from Richard Keane to explore another aspect, another perspective of STRIDE. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Have you ever had a secret? I mean, not just any secret, a big secret. The kind that hurts to keep in. I've never said this out loud before, but I'll try my best. I mean, you don't really know me, so I guess I can tell you. Okay, here we go. I'm gay.
You're accepted. The Facebook app that allows LGBTI youth to come out anonymously. Visit youreaccepted.com.au. Another community message supported by Joy 94.9.
This is Jack and Adam from the Victorian AIDS Council's Well, Well, Well team. Now, we know what STRIDE stands for, as Kel just explained most eloquently, but now we're going to hear from another person, an individual, to give us another insight. And we have Richard joining us in the studio. Thanks, Richard, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Richard, what does STRIDE mean to you on perhaps a personal level?
Okay, I guess living with a chronic illness like HIV, it's never sort of a straight line over a long period of time. There's ebbs and flows and ups and downs. And sometimes conditions like depression and anxiety can really disproportionately affect people living with HIV. I've had some lived experience around that. Around 5 years ago, I suffered for an extended period with depression. And this really excited me to have an option that could look at that support, not only that immediate support that you need, but over the medium and long term.
Because there's shorter term support. You can go to counselling, but that can be limited, can't you? 6 weeks.
Yeah, and that's really effective, and I encourage anyone who's dealing with those situations to reach out and to contact VAC and to talk about the counselling that's available through there. But it's great to get that plan in place, but one of the biggest things for me in that experience was social isolation. I was really embarrassed, and I felt like it was another level of stigma on top of my HIV. So there was already the stigma of HIV, but then when I realised that things weren't going well for me and that they'd really sort of fallen into a ditch, so to speak, it was really, really difficult for me to reach out and access help just out of that fear of another layer of stigma to deal with.
And I suppose also if you open yourself up to somebody else on a personal level, it does have its own pressures and tensions in itself. So having an online service that should be pretty comprehensive would be a bonus to people who are experiencing similar issues as yourself.
Absolutely, and particularly those that aren't in the inner city, metro areas and in rural areas and things like that, who don't have the ability to drop into somewhere like the Positive Living Centre to get that ongoing support that you need around those times. It's really good to have an opportunity for those people to be able to reach in and get peer support as well.
So the peer-based nature of STRIDE, I guess you would see as one of the major strengths?
Absolutely. Just it provides an opportunity for people to share not only what their own individual experience is, but to share the way that maybe people have dealt successfully with their anxiety and depression and other issues, so you can share different strategies between yourselves and other members in the chat room and mull those over with the facilitators that are monitoring the group as well.
And so when did you get involved with the project? Was it like, hang on, I know a thing or two about this. This is where I can sort of assist and sort of provide you with some insight.
I think in my role as president of Living Positive Victoria, I was approached to be included in this project. But I guess my engagement with this issue goes a bit further than that, as I was saying about my personal experience before. And I did facilitate an ongoing peer support mental health group at PLC for a period of time, which was based on the structure of the GROW peer support model. And so I was really interested in seeing this move to an online space and really broaden the appeal and the ability for people to access it. And as I was listening before, and it's a national program, so it's a really, really good opportunity for people to link in with each other and feel that sense of community connectedness, which is essential in becoming better and managing.
I know you're talking from a personal perspective, but in your role at Living Positive Victoria, you would have insight and be exposed to many, many people's personal experiences, perhaps similar to your own.
Yes.
Who you'd know would be experiencing anxiety, depression.
Absolutely, and it's great to have somewhere that you can refer those people to. And, like, even though the moderators will know your identity and everything else, you can take on a persona, so you don't really have to use your own name in the chat rooms and stuff, and that anonymity...
Oh, so it's like Grindr.
Yeah. Oh, not quite like Grindr. But there's probably things you can pick up on this website as well.
No, but that confidentiality and anonymity...
Information. Good information. You know.
Very good information.
But that confidentiality and anonymity is one of the core components of the project, because, as you said, you don't necessarily want to have that face-to-face, or that stigma of going to a social group and sitting around and going, well, I know you from drinking at the Lead, or I know you from drinking here. It's like you actually get to have that engagement and that connection, but to kind of do it from behind the safety of your own screen.
Yeah, it allows you to be a bit more candid and a bit more honest about what you're dealing with, and that's really important.
And so what advice would you give to others if they were thinking about it but haven't really taken the next step in terms of experiencing depression, anxiety, or even if they think they are?
Okay, if they think they are, I would always reach out. Maybe your GP can be a good place to start, or maybe you can contact VAC or PLC if you're a person living with HIV, or even Living Positive Victoria. There's a number of resources that you can be referred on to. But for me, it's even though it's a common experience, it's also an individual one, and you need a suite of measures to be able to get the best results.
Look, Richard, we'd like to thank you for coming in today and sharing your personal story, but also giving insight into how it can help others through this online resource that we're developing. This is Well, 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 talking about STRIDE, and we have Steve from Gamma on the phone. Steve, thanks for being with us today. Can you just begin by telling us what Gamma is exactly?
Gamma is a support group for men that have been in long-term heterosexual relationships and are coming to terms with their same-sex attraction.
Okay, so another demographic, totally. Steve, how long have you been involved with the STRIDE project?
For quite a while, almost from the beginning, I guess, in different capacities. Initially just sort of asking some questions and checking whether Gamma was prepared to help, and now getting involved in some of the actual, looking at the deliverables of the project and how we can assist in making them the right.
Sure.
And so I guess, Stephen, how has STRIDE assisted you? Has there been a process of learning that you've come across that you didn't expect when you were first initially getting involved with the project?
Well, I guess a little. It's great that there is such a project and, the resources that are going towards it, because it's something that Gamma has wanted to do for a while, but we don't have quite the funding that Beyond Blue and the NVAC have. So for us, it was a terrific opportunity to be involved and help provide some input and shape directions,
Steve, now Gamma represent another group of men who may need help from time to time. So do you think there are particular and specific issues that affect you and other men in your situation that STRIDE will impact upon, can have a benefit?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mental health issues are probably the top area of concern when men have come to our support meetings. We have meetings twice a month. And so, yeah, definitely the approach that's being taken is about mental health, the stigma associated with it, and all the things that come with, you know, coming out, as it were. You know, it's that process, and that's the thing that most of the men struggle with, and particularly around the area of acceptance.
Sure, and coming out in a different context, coming out, you may be a married man and going through a coming out process, which will bring its own levels of anxiety, stress, and stigma, I presume.
Absolutely, absolutely. A hell of a lot of, you know, embarrassment, I guess, in many ways. Self-acceptance is obviously the first step, and then acceptance of, you know, family, friends, community, and it goes outwards from there.
Yeah, a complex.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a fantastic resource.
Joy 94.9.
We are talking with Steve from Gamma about Stride. Steve, can you tell us how many men are part of Stride that would be in the Gamma community that would benefit from this project?
Okay, so the Gamma community, it's hard to put numbers on.
Sure.
Confidentiality is a big issue. You know, because some of them are not out. Some men are in the process of coming out, some are definitely out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, yeah, the impact is large. One of the issues has been that Gamma really, it's Gamma New South Wales, so we tend to, you know, our focus has been only in New South Wales, and even then, we only hold support meetings in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue has been, how do we reach a broader audience when I know that there are people out there? Because I get phone calls from all around the country and even internationally through emails as well. Mm. And that's been a big struggle of ours. There were groups in South Australia and in Victoria, but they've folded for various reasons. And Gamma New South Wales has persisted. Interesting. I'm not sure exactly why, but it's around being able to be in touch with the right with the community all the time, and at least have a presence and provide the right kind of support. So the regional guys suffer greatly because they're not able to be in touch with people, and that's one of the key things that you get when you come to a Gamma meeting, is the idea of meeting people that are in the same situation as you. Now, what the Stride Project offers is contact with people, contact with a community that can help no matter where you are. And that's the really powerful thing.
And so, Steve, what advice would you give to men experiencing similar circumstances like you have yourself previously?
My advice is to reach out. Don't do it on your own, because you're not. You're not alone. The process of self-acceptance is very difficult, and fraught with a lot of issues that, again, don't have to be dealt with by yourself.
Mm.
And it you know, that process is made a lot easier when, A, you start to talk to people and start to understand that it's easy. It actually is relatively easy to help yourself, but it's through that talking process and the sharing of your feelings, your emotions, where you're at, what's top of mind, and talking about the issues, you know, and sometimes you don't know what the issues are going to be until you get to them.
And
again,
you see Stride as kind of like a successful path to assist with the health and well-being of Gamma, of guys who associate
absolutely
with that group. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I say, you know, we struggle to get in touch with remote people. We do it by phone. We know that they're there because they contact us, and we have a support hotline. But we're a small team, so we can only, you know, manage to help a small number of people. The online or the digital domain is definitely going to bring a huge effective resource that we simply don't have right now, and that I can see people will want to use. One of the ideas that I talked about was, you know, confidentiality and safety and security are a big issue, particularly in the beginning of the process. So having a digital experience where it's easy to be anonymous and still get the help that you need and talk freely about the things. It's that environment creates that ability to be able to talk freely, and that's a valuable thing in itself.
It certainly is a valuable and perhaps overdue resource for men out there. So, Steve, look, I'd like to thank you for being available to talk to us so frankly about your personal observations and informing us about your lived experience as a man from Gamma and about the strengths that Stride brings to us all as a community.
My pleasure. No problem at all.
This is Jack and Adam of Well, 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 and we'll be back next Monday at 8 p.m. Have a happy Queen's Birthday, one and all. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.